When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello. So we're back, emerging bleary-eyed into the light after a month of relative quiet on the football front. As we warned on the last pod, it went from 0 to 60 very fast, but it somehow felt back to normal very fast too. Sat on the sofa, eating turkey, drinking the rest of the Baileys, watching the Boxing Day games. It felt a bit to me like, you know, sinking into a warm bath again, albeit this being FPL, a warm bath with a toaster plugged in, teetering on the side of it. We are Who Got the Assist. I'm Tom, at WTA _FPL. Lucy is my usual co-host. She is at Lucy Hynett with two T's. She's not available today because she's away with family. So friend of the pod, Adam Pritchard at 35Who, known for being Arsenal's correspondent on Planet FPL, who was last on in lockdown, actually. So long old time ago, has kindly said that he'd step in for this one. Great to have you on. How was your Christmas?
It was very good, Tom, and thanks for having me on again. And there's no one I would rather be sinking back into this warm bath than with you.
That's an interesting way of starting the pods, just giving people a visualization, especially those who know both of us, just having a warm bath together. yeah, okay, excellent. We should probably get into it. So on the pod today, I think it's just a quick amble, I suppose, through the Feast of Football that we saw. Still digesting it, so it's going to be nothing too strenuous on this sort of first pod back after some action. A slow jog, or even just a walk, rather than a fast-paced dissect of what's gone on, with a few stopping points on the way through. First thing to do, though, is just talk about the outcomes for this week just gone. We're recording on Wednesday 28th of December, 10:15, so Man City Leeds has just finished. First question to ask, Adam, how did you get on, and how's your season been going too?
I mean, I'd rather not talk about how my season's been going overall. It's been quite a poor season so far. I'm currently ranked, according to Live FPL, at 2.2 million, which obviously is nowhere near where I'd like to be. I'm blaming most of that on a poor start and a somewhat naive assumption that I could finalise my team on a runway as I landed back from holiday on in Spain. Mm. And starting without Gabriel Jesus did not go quite as planned and saw me plummet down the ranks in the early game weeks. Thankfully, today I've got 88 points, which has seen me get a green arrow, although I'm sure, as we were discussing before we started recording, going on Twitter, we'll see plenty of people with over 100. So yeah, this game week has been a rare positive in a season of pretty bad weeks so far.
Mm, yeah. Okay. Well, as you know, it's been the opposite for me. I did a little bit better than you. 93 for me. It's very rare that I'll say I've been hard done by getting a score in the 90s. And that definitely makes me feel even more of an ingrate than I did writing that note. But I do, like, so I think I'm a few points light here, Adam, on a few players in terms of what how I kind of did. So a key return is obviously Trippier, Robertson, my key differential with an assist and three bonus, which was very nice. Across my midfield, Saka, who was my main sort of differential against the third forward with 9 points, Martinelli with the 8, Almiron with the 8, Rashford with a nice 14. Up front, obviously, Haaland tonight's got 26 with the captaincy on it. But I had Ramsdale in goal because he did one penalty from West Ham, offered precious little otherwise, got the save point and probably could have matched Kepa to some extent if that penalty hadn't been given. He's not very good at penalty, so I didn't expect to save that. Liverpool lapsed concentration, which saw Robertson concede. KDB this evening, I went with him over Salah in the end. Because it should have had 5 assists in the first half. Like, definitely. It was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. I was saying before we came on, like, I was more animated in that game than I was watching Arsenal on Boxing Day, which probably just shows the way FPL has gone for me now. And then finally, of course, Darwin flipping Nunez. Like, oh, we'll talk about him later on. But yeah, all in all, all right. I'm into the top 50K now. So modest green arrow, something like, I think it's about 12, maybe 15% actually, from 56K to 47K, which is, you know, fine. It's just one of those things where you're kind of thinking to yourself, oh, you know, it would have been a much bigger arrow if those other things went my way.
yeah, I know what you mean. And I suppose one of those things tonight did go my way because I started with Kyle Walker, and genius that I am, I left Almiron on the bench. So I have his 8 points tidily coming in for me.
Very nice.
As Walker was a no-show.
Very nice. There was a lot of sort of negative tactics going on in my mind, at least when I was watching the games. Like, you know, little things like lead scoring, that moved the text. Again, maybe I shouldn't be looking at live FPL as much as I should, as I was, especially this evening, where I seemed to be hyper-engaged with it. But like lead scoring, that moved the safety score down. So it increased my green arrow from like 1K to 9K or whatever it ended up as. And yeah, a few other things, if they'd gone my way, you know, if that Forest goal had stood, for example, loads of people, I think you've got Shaw, haven't you? Like, you know, him not getting that clean sheet would have been quite good for my mini leagues. You know, loads of little things like that. But hey, you know, Cancelo coming off the bench meant that I saw loads of people who had benched Trippier, which was unfathomable to me. So I didn't look at FPL Twitter really over Christmas. None of that sort of process of thinking that seems to have been going on, mass hysteria, you might term it, had really touched me. So yeah, I was quite, I would say I feel sorry for people who have had their Trippier 12 pointer blocked, but in some ways I'm really not. Trippier, sorry. Any gambles you took? So I've mentioned a few of mine and I'll kind of just voice over them again in just a second, but is there anything you did with your team in terms of setup? Like, obviously Luke Shaw doesn't count as a massive gamble, but is there anything that you did which, you know, was perhaps against the grain when you set up after Christmas?
I think probably the biggest gamble I took was not going with a Liverpool attacker. So obviously Darwin Nunez, and as you've already mentioned, we'll discuss later, was certainly in the FPL Twitter zeitgeist. And a lot of people I know had sort of returned to the warm woolly jumper of owning Mo Salah in midfield. I decided to go against both of them, opting for KDB as my main premium midfielder and choosing to go with Harry Kane up front, actually. Mainly because I felt, as I think you might have said on the pod a couple of times previously, he'd been so consistent yet seemingly overlooked in the wider discourse. He just seems to be ticking away pretty regularly with points. And so I thought I'd rather have that that steady Eddie kind of player up front as opposed to someone who seemingly is the complete opposite in Darwin Nunez, who you really have no idea what you're going to get week to week. See, I'd say probably that was my main gamble. I suppose also going without Cancelo, if you ignore the fact that he didn't start tonight, is probably a pretty big gamble. But then I have Kyle Walker, who also didn't start tonight, but offers that kind of City fullback coverage. So there's a little bit of mitigation on that one.
Oh, fair play. So you went for the freemium sort of route then, KDB, Haaland and Kane.
Yeah, I think there's enough value to be had elsewhere in midfield that certainly makes that more viable at this stage of the season than perhaps it seemed in those opening weeks.
Yeah, and you took a lot of money out of defence as well, by the sounds of it, to make it all sort of fit together. Interesting. I mean, I went for three sort of... I did go for KDB over Salah as well. I was surprised how comfortable I was feeling about that. And to be honest, yes, I know Salah got a tap in and got an assist. But, you know, watching KDB tonight, I feel kind of that's luck, or as some people would put it, variance, that KDB didn't come through. But there are a few things, three things I think that I expressly did, which I felt were kind of, I would constitute gambles in goal, where I'm going to start glamorous. So I did Ramsdale in goal over Kepa, because I felt a back line of Rambo, then Trips, Cancelo and Robbo was a solid four, which I could just forget about until my final wild cards played. And as I mentioned earlier on, you know, the penalty for Benrahma, I think that was, West Ham were pretty abject going forward. I think that was the only sort of real moment of threat. And you know, that was a bit unlucky. It didn't go my way there, or at least that penalty was given. But still, I've got kind of still believe in that. Although I'm going to have to look at potentially some Chelsea defensive cover, because I can only see Kepa's ownership rising. Second thing was Saka. I went there over a third striker. So increasingly, I felt after doing last week's pod, and I was like, oh yeah, Mitrovic, of course. I thought about it a bit more, and I felt that leveraging my team value over that Mitro spot was a good idea, like going for an 8 million midfielder, because Mark, for general, was all over them, rather than going for, you know, a Martial or an Nketiah. Both of them, of course, scored. But I did, and timestamps on my transfers in now show it, and actually moved Mitro out for Saka before the Silver Press conference. So it wasn't that kind of that decided it, but of course it did have sort of a nice sort of it rubber stamped that, I suppose. But yeah, Saka over the first striker, and obviously Mitrovic, because of, and we'll speak about him in a little bit, but because Marco Silva's presser, his effective ownership was like 8% in the top 100k, and that could have been, you know, a massive gut punch if I'd have gambled against him. And yeah, you know, given what he scored, it was a goal and two assists, wasn't it? And finally, Robertson over James. Got very lucky there, of course. But equally, I just didn't fancy James with his injury records and also the close proximity of Chelsea's games. I know it looks really high anxiety now, but that he wasn't in the picture for me on the last pod, and I spoke about why it wasn't in my team on the last pod. So I have recorded evidence of this. It's not me swooping in and being like, look at this. Thank you, Captain Hindsight. But yeah. Any regrets in what you kind of ended up with? Because obviously there were loads of different sort of things that ran for everyone's head as we got close to that Boxing Day deadline.
Yeah, I think probably my one regret, and I don't even know if I can necessarily call this a huge regret, is the fact that I went for Trossard over Rashford. I'm still not entirely sure in myself I have a kind of concrete justifiable logic for going for Trossard, other than that I think the fixtures are decent enough to warrant giving someone who has looked so impressive so far in the Premier League a little bit longer in my side to kind of justify his place. And I was 50-50 in a striker position between Nketiah and Martial, and Arsenal's slightly tougher fixtures sort of pushed me towards Martial. And I thought, do I really want to be going with double United at this stage? And that wasn't something I was particularly convinced to go with. So I ended up sticking with Trossard, and obviously Rashford kind of continued his excellent form that he showed a little bit before the World Cup break for United, but more so really impressed for England, I think, in the World Cup, and has kind of continued with a renewed kind of vigour in his performances. So I think that's probably my main disappointment. Otherwise, I mean, when you score high 80s, like I did, and like you were saying, you're scoring into the 90s, it feels a bit like you're pulling out the miniature violin anytime you have too many regrets, really.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think maybe, you know, arguably, I think it was Ramsdale and Estupinian is what I went with. I could have gone for, you know, White and Kepa and be up a little bit more, and maybe, you know, Kepa and having that Chelsea defence cover may have been a better thing to do. But I still believe in that kind of solid four in the back. And the idea is that just stays now, and I don't have to worry about my defence for quite a while. But hey, no, one of the things that will happen as time progresses, where I'll keep reassessing that. So let's start on our kind of slow constitutional amble through what happens. A mini-league update will occur in 2 weeks' time, because the game has just finished updating and live FPL is being very slow. So I'm not able to get to that at the moment. So let's just do our constitutional walk instead and chat about a few salient points thrown up by FPL already this first week. So I think the first thing was that across the board, it was quite an interesting week, because basically the entire smorgasbord of popular picks returned. And hopefully that relights engagement, because we saw that a lot of people getting a bit disenchanted by how templatey it all was as we ended for the World Cup. But I do think as well, the gap between those who follow content and don't is becoming bigger and bigger. Do you think this is going to continue? And did you find it interesting that, okay, there's still going to be seven or eight players in every team and everyone's going to own Haaland, which I'll speak about in a sec. But did you find it interesting that people were coming out with all these different selections?
I think so. I suppose, for example, I think the example of Kepa is quite an interesting one, because I'm not entirely sure outside of the Twitter ecosystem how much he would really be too highly considered. And I think that leans into the content creation advantage, perhaps, you could term it. I think his, at least near my rank, according to Live FPL, his effective ownership is under 7%. And it felt like on Twitter, everybody had, or everyone was at least considering bringing in Kepa. And I think that is perhaps indicative of the fact that maybe less engaged, in air quotes, or however you want to term them, players weren't listening to FPL podcasts last week and going into this first game week. They'd enjoyed the World Cup break like everyone else and had only just realised the Premier League was starting again a few days ago. So I think perhaps at least initially there might be that advantage, if you want to call it, where we are seeing some more of the kind of Twitter popular picks doing quite well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always, of course, it's always that you've got, say, 20 or 30 players that are truly in the mix for FPL managers. And even though there were kind of a few sort of content creator influence tweets, players, I still think it was nice to see that kind of sense of variation across all the game in three or four spots. I mean, I think before, you were really looking at, for example, looking at effective ownership. This time, I think there were only a couple of real threats to me, as in getting the skull of being over 35% effective against me, which were Salah and Kane. Before the break, I think there was about five or six players each week. And I think that what that does, interestingly, linked with Haaland's effective ownership, is it, I think, as you kind of touched on, it opens frontiers of attack, because you can take a look at what everyone else is doing and how people are being led to think. And unfortunately, people are led to think, and I was definitely a victim of this for many years, and I'm sure I still am in many ways. But you can either spot something the herd has missed and go for that, or you can find a way to counter it. So things like, as I said, going against the third forward that everyone seems to have done, and for me, going with Saka. And I think a lot of this is tied up in that kind of continuing EO vacuum of Erling Haaland, because that just hoovers up a lot of the rank threat, and it's led to a nice situation, actually, where it is gains across the board, but that's coupled with an ability to not lose rank if you don't own, if you cover off the key men, so the rank threats like Almiron or something like that, just getting a player like that in and forgetting about it. If you play those sorts of things, but are able to differentiate elsewhere, it opens up, I'd say, maybe spot number 9 to 11 on your team for differentiation, as opposed to just being one spot, as it seemed to be at the back end before we went on the break. I think that's quite good, don't you?
Yeah, no, and I think it makes it a little bit more enjoyable, and certainly, at least amongst the people I talk to about FPL, you can have, like you were saying, sort of 6 or 7 different players in a squad, and both can look equally good and all perfectly justifiable. And it does make it feel, certainly for someone like myself who's kind of stuck in the 2 millions, makes it feel like there are gains to be had if I go against perhaps the more templatey picks, which I suppose I sort of have done a little bit with my side, it does make it feel like climbing up the ranks are more achievable than when we're stuck in the sort of time of the template and it just feels impossible to gain ranks at all.
Yeah, maybe it's just the case of a slight opening, a slight little chink of light at the moment, which enables individuals like yourself to get a move on. Because, you know, I've heard lots of really good stories this week of people, you know, being able to get 100 plus through a couple of picks, or maybe just through picking the template correctly, I don't know, but being able to exploit that enhanced differentiation potential which is out there. And I really hope that does continue. I think maybe double game week will focus minds in a couple of weeks in the new year, but for now, and hopefully for next week as well, I'm talking about much later transfers and captains, but I think we're going to see a lot of rolling behavior going on. I think it hopefully will be quite a quiet week for a lot of people. Hopefully for me, I should say, it'll be a quiet quiet 2 days, and so maybe we'll kind of see that change and people start to converge on, you know, obviously a few Chelsea picks, etc. But at the moment, I think that it was quite a nice return to FPL to see that apart from Haaland, who was luckily not over 200 EO, I think he was but 196, the capacity to gain on every single one of my players. So that's a really nice thing, rather than kind of being like, oh, well, you know, I don't want this guy to do anything, even though I own him. There's not a worse feeling in FPL than that, actually, than having a player on your team that you don't want to score. It just feels very counterintuitive to what I enjoy about my players doing anything in this blasted game. Speaking of which, I think was something that was kind of did catch my eye. As I said, I studiously avoided FPL Twitter just to avoid confirmation bias and avoid kind of herd mentality and things like that, just on Boxing Day and on Christmas Day, because, you know, I have stuff to do in real life. But one thing that did surprise me was that there did seem to be a bit of a lack in Arsenal and Newcastle players, and those are teams that I've seen. I had a browse from in the leagues before this, and it's definitely quite striking that a lot of people seem to have divested those teams. Goops asks, for example, with Arsenal assets now fixture proof. Now, we spoke about form being quite a contentious matter on the last pod. So, you know, we were asking, do we trust when people say, oh, you know, he was in good form before the World Cup break, and we don't know. But, you know, we saw Arsenal and Newcastle continue to trundle on from where they left off. And obviously it's just one game. We could find that kind of drops off. But I was a bit surprised that these assets weren't as owned to anywhere near the extent they were before, especially in the engaged, quote-unquote, sector or segments of the engaged sector. I was shocked to see Trippier had been discarded by many, for example. I mean, what do you make of all this? Do you think people did chop the baby out of the bathwater a little bit on Arsenal and Newcastle in favour of, you know, the fixtures when it comes to teams like Chelsea?
I think there's certainly a case of that. And I also wonder how much of the fact that we just had unlimited transfers to play with. And so people felt, if I stick with too much of the same team, have I kind of wasted the opportunity to make unlimited moves? I think a certain amount of that might have played into things, but I was very surprised, certainly, to see people move away from Trippier. I suppose the Martinelli case, a lot of people had invested when he was at his starting price and could make sort of a healthy profit off him. So maybe from an attacking perspective, you're thinking, oh, well, I'll cash out now and perhaps I'll move to someone like Nketiah in the striker positions where maybe there are less viable opportunities for a differential there. But yeah, I certainly think when seeing people move away from the likes of Trippier, Martinelli, who have been proven assets so far this season for very good value, I just wonder if there was a little bit trying to be too different, perhaps, there in those cases.
Yeah, and obviously there's the element of the analytics side of things, which was these people were one Reece James injury away from triple clean sheet, but there were the analytics side of things which were propagating a triple Chelsea defense and maybe kind of moving away from Newcastle with the idea that their that their performance wasn't sustainable. I just, to me, that just felt like I don't know how I put it without sounding like I'm hating on them, because obviously I do agree with understands like the role of stats, and I'm a positive, but I'm automation positive, as it were. But I did feel like there's an element of an abdication of personal thought in looking at those things and going along with it. Because I noticed that loads of these teams are the same, and there's definitely this idea that, oh, you know, there's, you know, these kind of people who just don't look at data, don't look at stats, don't look at analytics, and just go with the eye, and there's a whole herd mentality around that. But it seems that effect also occurs in this space as well. And obviously, in general, like the balance between past outcomes and fixtures was a really tough one to judge, because as we saw last week when I looked at Project Restart, there's not really a precedent for what we've seen. I can understand by that juncture why people went all out sword, but it did feel a bit excessive in places, and it is about balance. Like, I didn't think, for example, and I know I'm one of the most cynical Arsenal fans out there. We've all got to have our cynical badge and gun, don't we? But I didn't ever think that we'd suddenly stop being good. Like, I know Mark said last pod, you could have 0-1, 2, or 3 Arsenal and have justifications for all of it, but some of the teams that I saw, you mentioned selling Marcelli, for example, and going without any Arsenal altogether. It just seemed like the balance was a bit off. That's me putting it diplomatically. And it was great for the game of FPL, but I just wasn't sure about that sort of decision-making. And, you know, I think we, even though the first half we didn't play great, I kind of felt at no point on Boxing Day that we were in a position where we were gonna you know, come away without a positive result, right? Like, I didn't see a discontinuation or a broken line between how we performed pre-World Cup to how we performed on Boxing Day. Obviously, that's just one game, but I mean, I think that I've still got reasons for optimism. And hey, you know, I backed it with having Martinelli and Saka and Ramsdale. What did you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And seeing so many people sell Martinelli, I sort of haven't really seen the herd mentality question so much since Johnny Depp's lawyers took the stands. But, you know, sometimes people feel the need, like I was saying earlier, to get that little bit of differential when someone like Martinelli is owned quite highly now. And I think we can almost forget that he started at such a low price. And obviously, I think now he's probably over 60% effective ownership, I think. And the fixtures perhaps are what people were mainly basing their opinions going into this next section of the season off, with the massive unknowns about how the World Cup layoff was going to affect things. And obviously, I understand, as an Arsenal fan, I'm going to be slightly biased towards thinking our players are decent assets, certainly when we're performing so well. But yeah, like you say, in the West Ham game, and you touched upon it earlier, I think the goal was fortunate, if I'm being diplomatic. And yeah, Arsenal, in the form that they're in at the moment, even when they're a goal down, they don't play like they're a goal down. They don't play like there's that pressure on them to go and win. They play with a sort of a certain freedom, I think, that makes their attacking assets pretty enticing to own.
We've got our Arsenal back. Yeah, United behind the manager. Anyway, yeah, but I agree. And I also kind of, obviously, there's the counterpoint where you can say, well, Saka scored from his only shot, so therefore, you've gotten very lucky there, Tom. And Martinelli, obviously, perhaps didn't show too much end product apart from the goal. So you can say that was just pure luck. But I think that just watching the game overall, I think, was it Saka was one sort of brush of the ball away from having a brace? Like, you know, a lot of these things are very much things which are going to come out a bit more as we go further into the set. more than half of the season. And I guess in general, Adam, like I'll hear your thoughts about data in a sec, because like I'm kind of treating data at the moment with a bit of caution. It's like you've got two bits. You've got this one kind of sizable chunk of data, which is cooled. Like it's not frozen. It's not last season's data. It's not away in the freezer, but it's cool. You know, it's in the fridge. It might be reheated or it might be eventually just not eaten. And we've got one hot bit of data, aka what we saw this week. Now, I'm not really too sure yet how much I can read into this week, but I do think that the enduring quality of Arsenal and Newcastle, Newcastle as well, very imperious against Leicester, was reason to not throw the baby out of the bathwater, especially with when it came to the case of Trippier. I didn't really understand going against that, given the propensity for towards bonus, the creativity as well, and those two things uniting, making him into a really, really good player. I might be wrong, but I just didn't feel like that was a move. And I mean, I note with irony, and should I pretend there's some sympathy? There are a lot of people who have maxed out sold Trippier for Reece James now can't buy Trippier back because he's 0.1 million more expensive than James is. So yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it just felt like the balance was slightly off. And I think that even though I'm a little bit skeptical of using the data that we saw before, there is some sort of ineffable sense of qualitative understanding that meant that I wasn't willing to give up on Arsenal. And that's not me being a biased fan. That's just me being an FPL manager, and the same with Newcastle. I'm sure most people would stick to Trippier, stick to Almiron. But yeah, that's an interesting thing to know. I mean, data-wise, where are you with it? Are you going to be consulting, FBref and all this sort of thing? Or is it very much a case of waiting for it to accumulate again? Because I'm just quite unsure about how we use it at the moment.
Well, certainly I'm going to be taking anything I glean from FBref with a massive pinch of salt now they've switched underlying stats providers. But I was going to say, get the pitchforks out. Yeah, I think similarly to you, I'm looking at data perhaps to as a supportive measure for my decisions, which is probably the wrong way to use it at the moment. But I don't think I'm going to look at the underlying stats to be the sole and the primary decision maker when I'm making transfers at the moment. Obviously, there are some aspects of kind of certainly from an FPL perspective, points getters that carried over, like the Newcastle players that we've been talking about. But then again, we look at Leicester, who seem to be a little bit more solid with Wout Faes coming into that defence. And Danny Ward was viewed as suddenly the next Gigi Buffon. and that clearly didn't carry through. So I certainly think early days, there's still a little bit of an unknown around how that World Cup break is going to, certainly over the medium and longer term, affects so many players, whether they played or whether they didn't. So I think, yeah, we still need to take that data with a pinch of salt for sure.
Right. I mean, if underlying stats aren't the thing, maybe we should apply that idea to a live issue and see what our thought process would be. Now, admittedly, this is one that we're objective on because neither of us actually own the man in question, who is, of course, Reece James. Shock horror, another injury. I ignore completely and you ignore completely. And it seems like he's out for a month, really. And just to kind of do a quick market forces, it's no surprise that he's... wait, hang on. No, Gabriel Jesus is still being sold the most. Oh, dear. Put out on the day after his birthday. And 300,000 managers have seen enough of Jesus and then sold him. But yeah, Reece James, I'm assuming of the live core, has been sold by the second most, almost 170,000 sales out for him. And it's Cook Correa, who's actually the top transferred in defender at the moment. Elsewhere, you know, Mitrovic and Tony had a price rise last night. Mitrovic almost 400,000 managers up. Tony, 162,000 managers. What are the chances of that? And in midfield, you've got the likes of Rashford, Almiron, Odegaard all being caught, and your man Trossard, and Maddison, who's been ruled out by Rodgers for the next game, being sold, and Wilson too, being sold because he missed the last game due to illness and may well miss another game. Eddie Howe did not sound sure. So seems like Reece James out for a month. Really passive aggressive message on his Instagram, hinting at some frustration about the setback. Obviously frustrating for him, and given the listing of the injuries had recently, perhaps he was rushed back too quickly, who knows. But many a heart was broken in his pre-60 withdrawal in the Chelsea game. Knowley got in touch and asked for replacement ideas, adding Gurr. And Mitchell Sterling asks if we use this as a way to finance the freemium, as so many are sleeping on Kane. Let's go for Knowley's question first, because I think we've sort of discussed Mitchell's question, but we can embellish that a little bit more in a bit. But replacement ideas, Adam, or how you play it, obviously it doesn't affect either of us, so it's a bit of a tough one to really kind of get to grips with. But nonetheless, what would your approach be here? Would you be looking to replace? Would you be looking to kind of roll it and get more information? If you've got, you know, it's all very team specific, we know that, but from the outset, what would you think you'd do?
I think given James's injury history, and at least it, so like you said, judging by his Instagram post and the other kind of murmurings that are out there, it seems like it's not going to be a he's out for the next game, then back the game week after kind of situation. I think I'd certainly be looking to sell. In terms of replacements, I'm not entirely sure whether I'd go for another Chelsea defender. Chilwell's return timeline is sort of nebulous, as it always is. And I'm not entirely sure how attractive that Chelsea defence will be without Reece James and with a number of their key midfielders still absent. So in terms of replacements, look, if you were, I don't want to say foolish or naive, because that sounds condescending. If you were one of those who got rid of Trippier, I think that's probably the obvious route to go back to. Perhaps you can't afford him, even going for someone like Botman or Shaw. They're the kind of reliable, cheaper assets that will allow you to put more money into the midfield and attacking spots. I've got Shaw, so perhaps it's easier for me to recommend him, but I think United in general look a much improved team to the side we saw in those kind of opening 4 to 5 fixtures. So I think perhaps there are opportunities there. And then the likes of Robertson, who got an assist this week, obviously unlucky to perhaps not return more, I think you could say. There's an opportunity if you want to keep some money in the defence and you can afford him. I think that's certainly an option that is worth considering.
Yeah, I mean, he would be my, I own him, so he'd be my first choice. But yeah, obviously, like, very small effect of ownership. I think the overall ownership at the moment is about, I think it's hovering about 8%, something like that. So really not the 6% even. So really, you know, not a bad pick at all. If you can get there, of course, free bonus in last game, should have had 2 assists, really. Darwin flipping Nunez. And the lack of concentration, as I said, was the only reason I think Liverpool conceded to Ollie Watkins. No Maddison for Leicester next. So I know people are saying, oh yeah, I'm not sure I trust their defence yet. But nonetheless, I think that's probably okay. I mean, I wouldn't bet against them keeping a clean sheet against Brentford. Someone might. And Brighton and Chelsea, yeah, okay. I can see why there may be a few sort of questions there. But he's back and looking great, I think. And he's got that license to go forward, shown by the average position map. So he was more advanced than Trent, right up close to Oxlad as well, who said, interestingly, that he was playing a more withdrawn sort of wide midfield role in football manager parlance subsequent to the game, and a huge differential. If you want to look at any data, he's third for XA amongst defenders, second for XA per 90, and he's got that bonus potential plus on corners and free kicks. Woo! But of course, that's if you can afford. Elsewhere, a couple of things would kind of spring to mind. So, Cresswell at West Ham. Yes, West Ham have been poor, but Brentford, Leeds, Wolves and Everton are next four. So there should be opportunities of clean sheets in there. On corners too, a real favourite of Nick, once of this parish, and we'll be returning to this parish soon, actually. And other than that, maybe a Ben White or a Dunker Estupiñan at Brighton. Just getting that sort of character in, as Adam said, having that money to redistribute elsewhere and just saving yourself a transfer ahead of possible or probable upcoming doubles. So that could be the way I go. I probably agree with you on the Chelsea defender, to be honest. Like, maybe it's me with a poor experience earlier this season with Cucurella, but I bought him and then kind of the next week I sold him for Reece James straight away. I just feel like it doesn't fill me with too much excitement. And yeah, I agree, without Reece James, that defence, I don't see very much there apart from Kepa. And it's a bad defensive double for Chelsea. I know people will kind of always say, oh, I can't help but love a double game week, but it's not the best double defensively for Chelsea. Yes, you know, you'll get two bites of the cherry or whatever, but you've got Man City and you've got Fulham with Mitrovic looking monstrous. And then you'll be saddled with a player you don't want anymore, who could just well return 2 to 3 points. It just doesn't seem worthwhile for me to be paying, you know, 5-ish or whatever. No, if you're a sucker for the doubles, just buy Issa Diop or something like that at 4.3. Like, obviously, it depends what your team looks like, but, you know, I'd probably be looking at a Ben White, Dunker, Estupinian, and just kind of trying to look ahead for the long term. And if you have one of those players already, like a Dunk or a White that you've bought in initially, I wouldn't actually mind rolling this week. If you're probably going to have to absorb 0.1 million drop, sorry. But I wouldn't mind rolling this week, play White, and then see kind of what the situation is next week. I mean, all of those things seem like all right ideas to me. But it doesn't really feel like, unless you can get Robertson, that I'd be rushing to go anywhere else. I mean, do you think that's fair? I mean, would you be looking at just getting, you know, as I said, one of those players who's got potential double game week later down the line for your replacement then?
Yeah, I think I'd certainly be more likely to go that way than opting for another Chelsea defender that really feels like you're just kind of going there, like you say, because of the double game week rather than anything else. I think my temptation would be to move Reece James on now, and I feel like he's a highly enough owned player that it might be a few price drops if you continue to hold him too long. Certainly, like, being an England player, his injury is going to be more widely broadcast than perhaps kind of other players who are less well known. So I think you could be likely to be seeing a couple of 0.2 million maybe price drops, who knows, before he's next available. So my temptation would be, considering it feels like there are relatively kind of few other major problems amongst the template picks, or amongst the pool of template picks that we were discussing earlier, I would be tempted to kind of jump on the opportunity to replace James, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, I've said the market, looking at Cucurella, 70,000 transfers in. I mean, after that, it is players we've mentioned. So Shaw and Robertson both at around sort of 40,000, Trippier 37, and then Yaman Shah as well. So, you know, quite a few sort of players who are in the mix from those players that we've spoken about. Obviously, it depends where your team is. I just get Robertson and try to just lock down the spot. If you can't afford that, get a doubler in the future, like a White, like a Brighton player. If you don't have an Arsenal defender, you might as well just get White, because at the end of the day, you're probably going to need one eventually, especially if we do have doubles. But yeah, I can see why it's annoying, that's for sure. But no, it's always one of those things where I felt for people who had gone with James, but I didn't, for the reasons that most people who were reacting to that said that they should never have gone with James. So hey, there you go. And this question that Mitchell asked about, you know, financing the freemium with many sleeping on Kane, like, again, with Kane, it's just one of those, isn't it, where the guy just keeps returning annoyingly, Adam. And was that what you said it earlier? Is that something you're going to be trying to keep sort of enshrined in your team for the foreseeable future, to have that set up? Because, you know, it seems like one where, if I could cover it off easily, like if Almiron, I could cover it off easily, that's fine. But with Kane, it's one of the things you've got to sort of slightly reorient. Could that be an option for people with the money they release from Reece James?
I certainly think it is. And the main reason I went with Kane is I wasn't hugely convinced by the alternatives, I suppose. Obviously, there is the option to go with someone like Mitrovic or Nketiah or Darwin Nunez as as that other striker. I just think Kane has shown himself to be incredibly consistent this season, and I wasn't too concerned by the kind of speculation that the penalty miss in the World Cup will distract him, it will play with his head, and he won't be the same player when he comes back. I think Kane has shown himself to be one of the kind of the most determined and dogged players in the Premier League since he sort of broke through into that Tottenham side. And in terms of covering off, I think Kane is probably one of the hardest players certainly to cover off. I don't think you can get near his points potential with the alternative, certainly from what we've seen from Heung-min Son this season. He looks a shadow of his previous seasons, and the lack of fluidity in the Tottenham attack makes a player like, even a player like Perisic and someone like Kulusevski certainly less appealing to me. And that kind of all combines to make Kane quite a very reliable pick. And I don't feel worried that I'm going to have to sell him on anytime soon. And that allows me more kind of freedom to make perhaps slightly riskier choices around the edges of my team. Just having that player who I feel can be relied upon week in, week out to return.
It just raises the floor of your game week, doesn't it?
100%, yeah.
And that's something that, again, maybe I overlooked a little bit. I mean, I didn't mention him in my regrets. Maybe because I'm sort of hardwired this season to just ignore Kane and assume that I'm going to, you know, it's like being Leicester and starting a goal down. It's very much like that with Kane. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to get hold of him anytime soon, that's for sure. But maybe it is one that I'll need to think about, especially, you know, in wildcard two, because if you keep scoring, you're going to just see this kind of slow attrition to the rank as his ownership. Unless he scores a hat trick, I don't think you're going to see people kind of buy him quickly in a big spurt. You'll just see like a slow sort of movement to him over time. And maybe that's just something that I'm going to eventually have to try to cover, especially if I do end up kind of ascending even further. But it's definitely really interesting, and definitely kind of this could be a way that you start to build towards that. If you took James down to someone quite cheap, whether you'd be able to, you know, drag the freemium out in the next couple of weeks is a different question. I very much doubt people would be able to do that, because I think it's very much about how you set up. And I don't think anyone sets up big at the bank or big at the bank enough to get a Kane straight away, but still definitely somebody who's worth mentioning as part of a freemium, given, as we've mentioned, the ridiculous consistency that England's captain does provide. Speaking of consistency, Mitro, the Citro with Mitro. We all got mugged off by Marco Silva, didn't we? Well, I didn't, because I decided to get rid of him before that. But I mean, surely he's a must-buy before long. Most shots in the box amongst strikers, the third most shots on target amongst strikers, the most headed attempts among strikers, seventh for non-pen XG in the entire league as well. I mean, it can't be long, can it? And we've already seen the market forces before he becomes a major rank threat.
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to be entering that territory soon. And certainly with the double game week for him on the horizon, it's as someone without him, I'm almost a little bit annoyed that Martial returned this week, because that spot there, I've kind of primed up to switch to Mitrovic. And unless he picks up that kind of sword of Damocles yellow card that is hanging over his head at the moment, I'm going to find it very, very difficult to resist him. Certainly, as he certainly shrugged off the championship striker, the sort of modern day Serbian Cameron Jerome tag that some people were kind of attaching to him at the start of the season.
I mean, I think that this is definitely something. I think there's some that Lucy mentioned as well to me when we're talking about, you know, our teams and how we'd eventually set up on Boxing Day morning. Admittedly, I was lying in bed feeling incredibly hungover. So I think my responses were, okay, sounds good. Great. Thanks. Like, just also because I was pretty hungover. But yeah, she was definitely saying about, you know, structure being really important to her, and she was finding it difficult to get away from that structure. And I'm sure with me being set up as 3-5-2, 3-5-2, 3-5-2. Hey, in the right place.
Great name.
yeah, but I mean, with me being set up that way, that would be something that people would say, hang on, that's kind of, you know, why maybe I stopped with the 3-4-3, because people would say, okay, well, I've got Martial, I've got an Nketiah, I've taken a short-term punt on him, now Mitro's in. And that's definitely going to be something I have to think about. And obviously a part of my sort of thought process was, hey, you know what? Hothead Serbian, yeah, he's going to end up getting that fifth yellow card sometime soon. But yes, definitely a bit of a monster this year. I think we said at the start of the season that, you know, there was this kind of characterization of him. Maybe I was a bit more skeptical at the start of the year, but you know, a lot of the work that had been done by Dara, your correspondent colleague, Planet FPL, were saying, you know, the team is all set up to service him. We've seen that this year. The Fulham team is remarkably different from the ones we've seen in the past, in that it's all set up to service Mitro. And that's being borne out in his data. He's just incredibly good as an FPL asset at that price. One of the very few strikers, apart from Ivan Toney, who is kind of, I guess, drawing our attention up front. But there is one other player who has drawn our attention up front, and that is Darwin bloody Nunez. FPL Janino asks, can Darwin cover Salah? Obviously not on this week's evidence in terms of outcomes, Adam, but overall, you know, riddle me this. Would you rather have an FPL asset who gets a lot of high XG chances but doesn't finish, or an FPL asset who does get many chances but scores low XG chances across the board? Which one would you prefer? The guy who's getting loads of chances but can't score, or the guy doesn't get very many chances but, you know, finds a way to score every now and again?
Perhaps I'm slightly biased in this one, because when sort of the first stirrings of FPL was starting up again after the World Cup, I think I posed to you and a couple of other people, I've never known a player to go from sort of donkey to grand national winnings, like racehorse, faster than Darwin Nunez. It felt like in the few days people started logging back on to FPL, they had been hypnotized into getting Darwin Nunez. Such was the zeitgeist behind his pick.
It's from red bum to red rum.
Exactly. And he certainly made a bit of an arse of himself in the fixture this week. And I suppose a lot of it is what you're willing to put up with. If you're watching the games, the fact that he obviously gets a lot of high XG chances is obviously good from a data and a probability of scoring points perspective, but it is incredibly frustrating to watch. And even as a non-owner, I found some of his kind of the profligate nature of his finishing, I found extremely frustrating. And he doesn't necessarily fill me with confidence when he like lines up, or if he has a one-on-one. And if I'm paying, even if I'm paying like north of kind of 8.5 million, for a player, I want to be confident that they can finish a one-on-one. And I know that sounds really simple to say, but it's kind of just the way I approach FPL. And whether or not he can cover Salah, I think that's a massive discrepancy, both in terms of player quality and points potential. I think you're probably more likely to have a closer comparison when you look at like Foden to someone like KDB or someone like Haaland. I think their point, or actually, let's just say Foden and KDB, because Haaland's a different animal, really. I think their points total is likely to be closer than Darwin and Salah.
Okay, I mean, I still think that given the amount of chances that he gets, the points potential points is probably one that is worth mentioning. Like, yes, you may be a bit of a naysayer, especially if you see him as an equine animal. But I mean, the guy is still sit for non-pen XG overall this season. Like, it's the movement is great. It's just the finishing is terrible. He could not hit a barn door. And I don't know if you're old enough to remember like Drogba when he first came to the Premier League. But Darwin does remind me of the early days of Drogba a bit. A lot of missed chances, lots of falling over. I remember you used to watch Drogba at uni and be like, oh no, poor Diddy. He's been floored again by being tapped on the shoulder. And he was offside the whole time. But you see how he eventually morphed. It's very much about he's in the sort of the embryonic phase of where he could go in terms of, you know, his development. I think there definitely is a player in there, especially with the movement. And I know, I kind of see it being like a real pathway for him. He either becomes Drogba Mark II, something like that, or he becomes Timo Werner. I think that that's kind of where he goes, really, there. It really is kind of a two-horse race in terms of his eventual output. But, you know, where will the finishing post be, do you think? I mean, are you kind of writing off Darwin altogether?
I think certainly for now, given the other forward, from an FPL perspective, the other forward options that present themselves, that kind of Martial, Mitrovic, who we've already spoken about, maybe even Eddie Nketiah, who certainly showed more of a finishing and forwards instinct against West Ham than Darwin Nunez did. And then there is the kind of unknown to chuck into the equation of what does the apparently imminent signing of Cody Gakpo mean for Darwin Nunez? I mean, certainly if I were the Uruguayan, it wouldn't fill me with a huge amount of confidence to see a hotly tipped young attacker be signed in the January window after I only joined the Liverpool club in the summer. So yeah, I think for now there are just better value options out there than Darwin. And I certainly think there are better value options in the Liverpool team than him.
Yeah, I mean, given the Mitrovic situation and the probable need to cover a double in two game weeks' time, I think there is a semblance of thinking that Darwin's already kind of running his final furlong for me in the next game, and he could be taken to the glue factory in favour of Mitrovic next week. So definitely it's one that I can see people getting very frustrated by already. I mean, last game against Southampton before the break, fantastic. You know, got a brace. Everything went his way that day. So I'm willing to give him another shot. It's just how that goes. It's either a shot and he stays, or it's a shotgun to the head and he leaves. We just need to see how that goes. Our friend Alan said on the Slack earlier, by the way, that Darwin is just Haaland with less luck. What are your views on this?
I mean, I think to imply Haaland is lucky is probably doing his talent a little bit of a disservice. I don't even know what to make of that, to be perfectly honest. I think we saw tonight, referring to the Leeds game, Haaland certainly had, I would say, two clear chances where 99% of the time this season we would have expected him to score.
Yeah.
And perhaps, like you say, maybe the narrative difference between the wider perception of the two. If certainly there was a one-on-one, I think, where Haaland shot basically straight at Meslier's knee. And if Darwin Nunez did that, perhaps the discussion around him is completely different. I suppose the big thing for me is Haaland's service is much more multifaceted, and I think much more consistent than what Haaland has been getting so far this season. I think the support cast, as you often like to term it, is of a higher quality for Haaland than it is for Nunez.
Certainly. But I guess this leads me to the final question. I mean, I've mentioned 3-5-2 a couple of times. And obviously you've got Mitro, you've got Darwin, Martial and Ketcher, etc., versus the midfield maestros. And what struck me a little bit this week, because I said right at the top, we had so many players who are in the mix, scoring well. And I just wonder whether we're going to see a reversion to midfield that we always seem to see as the season gets to its tail end, or a return to kind of flexibility. Because I mean, I was thinking about this earlier on, and I just feel the midfield is so packed at the moment with all manner of viable options, and fitting in the others around the top 20 places or so in other positions is quite easy to do. So Haaland, Kane and Trippier in the top 10 of other positions, the rest are midfielders. You've got in the top 20-ish, Almiron, Salah, KDB, Odegaard, Saka, Martinelli, Trossard, Maddie, who's currently crocked, Rodrigo, Foden, and then you've got Rashford a little bit later on. So you're talking 11 viable midfielders, 12 if you add in Mount ahead of the double game week, and also Kulusevski at Spurs. So you've got a baker's dozen then. And of course, around half of them as well are team's talisman. And fitting that selection into a team where people have got four spots at the moment due to how Andreas Pereira at Fulham is being viewed as a gift and should be kept at all costs. That begins to me to be a source of, as I spoke about earlier on, a frontier where you can think a little bit about challenging the template, especially if you say next week, get rid of Darwin for Mitro in the 3-5-2, like I might well do. Now, I know we're not saying that data is particularly trustworthy, but the third striker this year has been underwhelming thus far. Kane and Haaland are at the top. If you did go with Kane and Haaland, like you have done, then fair play. But most people did go for the kind of, you know, the combo of the mid and forwards, and therefore you'd have, you know, one of Tony or Mitro as kind of the second striker. Other than that, you know, the days of the forwards vying for our attention has increasingly receded year on year, as I've mentioned several times on this podcast. So I think it's really interesting just to think about this very quickly about structure going forward. It's only come to mind because I mentioned Lucy being obsessed with it, and maybe one that we'll return to in future. But, you know, could this be something that's worth looking at a little bit going forward? Because I just kind of looked at Andres Pereira and how people were kind of shaping things around to make sure that he's always there because he's a gift at 4.6, and kind of thinking, oh, hang on, that's a point to attack. And hey, Sam Greenwood at Leeds, 4.2, got an assist and was on, across all of the set pieces. Hey, he's poo, but at least he's a good poo, a valuable poo. But yeah, with all of those midfielders going at him, could this be something to watch as a kind of a short sort of naval gaze future projection endpoint?
I certainly think so. And I suppose a lot of the midfield options is because there are so many of them, each of them individually has a certain element of gamble about them, I think. Like, if you're going to go, as you have done, doubling up on the Arsenal midfield, although they've performed well thus far this season, you are sort of hedging your bets on the fact that they're going to be able to continue to perform during this slightly trickier spell of fixtures. Perhaps when you're going for someone like Rashford, you're projecting forward based off more recent performances and thinking, okay, they're going to be able to perform well for the value that they have. Someone like Almiron almost feels like a given at this stage. And then, like you say, there are a litany of other midfielders, almost to the point where you don't necessarily even need to have someone like a Pereira in your team. You can put together a very, very decent five-man midfield and still have Haaland and then one of the kind of 6.5 to 7.5 million forwards pretty easily now. There seems to be a lot of value and a lot of intriguing and enticing options in that midfield at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really so much about continuing to perform and being wedded to those players. Obviously, if they are performing, you're going to keep them. But it's more about using that breadth of possible options to your advantage. It feels like there's a lot more players within the midfield slot that you can play around with, depending on things like fixtures or quote unquote showing form. And you can be a lot more flexible with that slot, especially if, you know, say, as I said earlier on, with my defence being quite fixed. Say you've got Kepa, I've got Ramsdale, whatever. And then you've got the dependable players like Robertson, like Trippier, like Cancelo, whatever. And say you end up with one of Haaland, who's probably going to be most people's teams, and Kane, or maybe one of Mitrovic or something like that. You can focus all that that kind of transfer activity on your midfield, barring injuries and stuff. And maybe that would be an interesting thing to see going forward. But it just struck me, really, when I was watching it, especially with Arsenal, loads of people kind of saying, oh, can we triple up an Arsenal midfield? It reminded me of Liverpool quite a few years back when people had Lallana, Coutinho and Firmino. It's just one of those things that really kind of came to mind for me, that how many midfield options there are and whether it is something that's worth kind of bearing in mind and being open to as we move forward. Although, admittedly, with double game week coming up, it's one of those things that probably may be something that evolves going forward rather than something which is going to be particularly relevant immediately. But hey, still one of those things which was of interest to me watching and hearing reactions to the game which has gone. So transfers and captains, do we even need to mention captains anymore? Probably not, Adam. But transfers and also plans for game week 19, because I'm probably not going to be doing a pod on New Year's Day just because I have prior engagements with my other half. Any ideas for this week and any ideas for game week 19? I know obviously asking you to plan 2 weeks in advance with not knowing what happened next week is obviously one of those things, is quite a remote possibility. You wouldn't know what you're going to be doing. But anything come to mind, or any sort of ideas, schemes of what you may do?
Schemes makes it sound a little bit more sinister than it probably is. I think this week I'm probably going to roll there. Aren't sort of any major issues in my side. I've not had any injuries. Kyle Walker not starting is one I will look at a little bit in the week, but the tight turnaround makes it sort of unrealistic, especially from Guardiola, that we'll get anything even approaching definitive on his likelihood of playing. Looking forward to the game week after, obviously. Fulham players will be front of mind. And as I mentioned earlier, Martial is looking like, or he certainly was the spot I had earmarked to go for Mitrovic. And whether or not I go through with that will sort of depend on how United look this week. I think they've got Wolves. And also on sort of how Chelsea themselves look defensively without Reece James. Because I do think Mitrovic against the Chelsea defence without Reece James and the instability in general that will cause them could certainly be an avenue for points.
Yeah, Martial to Mitrovic for you, obviously depending on the yellow card situation, seems ideal. The one thing that for you is Kane's also on 4 yellow cards. a lot of finger crossing where you're concerned with all of those forwards teetering on the brink, apart from Erling. Interesting. Okay. I'm definitely joining you on rolling this week, and I will spend, I've got no Fulham and no Chelsea, so I'll be spending New Year's Day whilst engaged with my other half. Not literally engaged, but doing things with my other half, and wondering what the I do with my two free transfers. And I've basically decided, Adam, to leave all doors open. The issue is I now have so many potential roads that I need maybe more information. And then maybe I'll have even more sliding doors when it comes to making decisions. Because a few things I could do, I could get Mitrovic and make it 3-4-3 for a short while and go against what I said, but needs must. I could go from Darwin to Mitrovic, give up on the Darwin experiment and evolve my team beyond him. I could get a goalkeeper transfer and do Ramsdale to Kepa. I love a goalkeeper transfer. I could get Mount in midfield for Saka and follow up what I was saying about being open about changing midfielders. Or I could say, and I'm sure this is not what I'm going to do, I could say, hey, you know what? It's double game week, but it's not a good one. I'm not going to be sucking into this and not bother with it. I think I just need to see where I go with all of this. I just simply don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if I end up doing Darwin to Mitrovic and doing kind of Saka to Mount, something like that, and captaining Mitrovic. I think I probably prefer him actually slightly over a Chelsea midfielder for the double game week. But I mean, we'll have to see. I think it's one of those, isn't it, where roll and see. I think if you have got a James sort of character to remove later on, as Adam was saying, get rid of him. I was saying kind of roll with it if you can. But either way, I think it'll be interesting to see what people do, especially with a very, very, very short window of consideration ahead of the further game week before the double. Well, thanks for joining me, Adam. I think that's your lot. Hopefully that was useful. And our final pod of 2022. Thanks so much for stepping in, Adam. It's been very good chatting to you over the course of the last hour.
It's been a pleasure as always, Tom, and I'm glad I could leave the listeners on a high for 2022.
Excellent. We were Who Got the Assist. You can find me, Tom, on Twitter at WGCA_FPL. You can find Lucy at Lucy Heinert with 2 T's. The plan from now on is that there's no pod for game week 19. I'm out on New Year's Day and I won't have the time, to be honest. And, I'd rather just do no job than do a half-assed one. I just don't think it's worth anyone's time. So I'm just going to leave it be. On the 5th of January, Lucy and me will be back. We'll be mid game week 19 at that point, previewing game week 20. It'll be obviously before the second game double game week, the last game double game week Fulham and Chelsea, but it'll be after the Chelsea and Man City game on the Thursday. And I am in Hong Kong from mid-January until late January, so I'll be missing game week 20, the pod for that. However, I will be editing it, unfortunately. That's just the way it goes. Game week 21, I will be missing that, but I'll be editing it, unfortunately, remotely. Nick is kindly stepping in for me, and Lucy will be on that with him too. And normal service will resume on my return to the UK for game week 22. Ooh, we hope it's just a G. Now, happy new year. Many thanks for lending us your ears in 2022, and we'll speak to you again in 2023. Happy new year. Take care.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.